Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak, and our mission here at Growing Leaders is to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. Well, we're in a crazy moment here with a global pandemic happening, and today we want to talk about, in the midst of this crazy time, what messages are we sending to Generation Z through our actions as adults? And both of us know, Tim, and probably our listeners know already, those messages often are not too good.
Well, they aren't. And Andrew, we have been talking about this for years, long before COVID-19 was ever introduced to our lives, that this generation of parents and adults in general aren't always the best examples. And maybe part of the reason we're not seeing kids grow up is we adults haven't grown up first. Now, I know that sounds like an overspeak, but I was absolutely stunned at an NPR online report that was, I didn't know whether to chuckle or cry when I read about the snowflake generation, and it wasn't the kids, it's the adults. Mm-hmm. So along with hand sanitizer and other disinfectants, toilet tissue, as you know, has become increasingly hard to find at local supermarkets. My wife has kept us stocked up, but I'm thinking, why in the world are we so obsessive over toilet paper? What does that have to do with a pandemic? Nothing, except we are scared that it might run out. So police in Newport, Oregon, posted a Facebook message to the citizens in that area, and I want to read it to you now, Andrew. Here it is. they wrote, "It's hard to believe that we even have to post this, but do not call 911 just because you ran out of toilet paper. You will survive without our assistance," end quote. I know. So evidently people were running out of toilet paper, and the first thing they thought to do was call 911, which, by the way, reminds me of a few years ago. Remember the woman that was in the news that called 911 at McDonald's when they run out of chicken nuggets? And I'm thinking, what are you doing? Yeah. But I guess we're just looking outward to someone to solve my problem for me. But these are grown-ups. These are adults. And I guess what I want you to do, listeners, is just please with me for a moment, pause and think, what message is our conduct, our leadership, sending to the next generation, which is learning their leadership models from the people like us? It's just not good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually quite dangerous. You know, as a side note, I actually saw, you know, there's those photos that people are sending around of how people buying these mountains of toilet paper from Costco or whatever. Yeah. And I remember seeing a video of a family, and the dad is sitting with a piece of paper and a pencil calculating, okay, if you bought 3 packs of gigantic toilet paper from Costco, here's how long you would, how many times you'd have to go to the bathroom to use it all, you know? I thought that was such a great, by the way, he's sending the right message to his kids.
That's right.
People are crazy, you know, doing all of this. But that's we just have to be careful, because I think that you hit the nail on the head there. When we do even benign activities in the midst of a moment like this, the message that our kids hear is, oh, I need to worry,
or
I need to be afraid, or this is what we do in the midst of a hard situation. And the message we need to send back to them is, no, that's not what we do. It can't be what we do. We've got to stop spreading the wrong kind of message.
Yeah, it's true. So I have a question, listeners, for you. Do you know what spreads faster than the coronavirus? It's fear.
Yeah.
It's absolutely contagious. In fact, the good news is courage is contagious, but so is fear. And we have an option in front of us, a choice in front of us, make it a trade-off in front of us. But it's infectious, and I believe it's doing actually more damage overall to kids in Generation Z than a virus is. And sadly, catching our anxiety, they begin to panic too. They're looking for signals for us. Just like a toddler who's learning to walk will fall down and look up at the adults and to know whether he or that little baby should cry or not or whatever. And if the adults panic, the child panics. I know that's a vivid picture, but I'm just saying it's much more subtle when they turn 15, 16, 17 years old. But they're still intuitively looking to us, the older generation who is parenting, leading, and coaching them. And I'm just saying, we've got to somehow get our stuff together and lead them well, especially during this time. Andrew, so I saw two moms squabble over paper towel packages at a local grocery store. And while that's ridiculous in itself, they both had young children just watching these mothers, somewhere between 35 and 40 years old, squabbling. And I'm thinking, what do you think they're going to do? We will not get any more civil when they're adults, because all they watched was a bunch of babies squabbling like children when they were growing up. So I don't know. I'll stop ranting. This isn't talk radio.
Step off the soapbox for a minute.
Yes, I probably need to. Anyway, so you listeners, you get the idea. So we're going to try to give you some really practical tips here on how to lead well during this time of coronavirus.
Yeah, the reason this is so important, I know you kind of touched on this, but I just want to share one more statistic with us. This past couple of weeks, I think, some statistics have started coming out that are the symptoms of, I think, what we're talking about here, which is the rise in anxiety. In particular, the healthcare hotline, which is run by the United States government, reported that their calls had jumped 891% year over year in April. And those kinds of crazy numbers can only be a sign to us that the message that adults are sending to all of, you know, adults are calling that hotline, but young people are calling that hotline too. Yeah, and the message is being sent to them is, this is a moment for panic. This is a moment for incivility. This is a moment for all the things that we know. It just can't be about that. And this is why it's so important that we care for the message that we're sending.
So today, Andrew, that's a great, great point. And that statistic alone is sobering. 890%. So almost nine times as many calls this year as there were last year at this time. So let's talk for just a minute before we get into three big questions we need to ask ourselves as we lead the next generation. I want to talk about what's most infectious at a time like this. And once again, I'm not talking about COVID-19. What affects us is not so much what happens to us, but the narrative we embrace for what happens. So in other words, we both know people, Andrew, that have gone through maybe tragic circumstances, and one person ends up coming out of it horribly, feeling like a victim, and they never really recover emotionally. And other people, you go, oh my gosh, they're stronger now. And it was because they both unwittingly chose different narratives on which they would tell the story. We're all telling a story right now about what we're doing during this coronavirus. We will come out of it either victims of this whole thing, feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm postponed, I'm penalized, I'm punished, or we will come out with a great attitude saying, what good might have come from that time away? But I guess I'm just wanting you to be thinking, we adults are helping our young with a narrative that they're forming in their minds about this whole thing. Now, is it a time of anxiety? Of course it is. I'm not saying live in denial. Is it a time where people are getting infected and even dying? Yes, it is. I'm not saying live in denial over that. What I'm saying is, in the midst of that reality, how do we come out of it not with rose-colored glasses, living with superficial optimism, but living with a narrative of there is hope? Mm-hmm. I feel like we need to talk for just a minute, Andrew, about the Stockdale paradox. Do you remember hearing about this? Admiral John Stockdale was talked about in Jim Collins' book, Good to Great. Yes. He's a famous POW, prisoner of war, and I believe it was during the Vietnam War. But Jim Collins was talking to him, interviewing him one day, and he talked about what enabled him to survive as a prisoner of war when others of his fellow soldiers did not survive. And sometimes it was a physical thing. Sometimes it was torture. But Stockdale said it was actually a paradox. He said the people that died most quickly in that prison of war camp was the optimist. And Jim kind of raised his eyebrows and said, the optimist? They died quickly? He said, yes, because the optimist ended up saying things like, well, by Christmas, we'll be out, or by Easter, we'll be out. And of course, Christmas came and left, and they were still there. Easter came and left, and they were still there. He said, instead of optimism, it was the people that had the narrative of hope that made it. They didn't say, by this date, we'll get out. They said, I know one day we will conquer this. I know one day we will be out. And I'm telling you, that's exactly what we need to emulate now, the Stockdale paradox. It's living with current, less than optimal realities. We are living in a time where we will look back, Andrew, and say, that was horrible, all those people that died. Yeah. But at the same time, we can come through saying, But look what good did come from it. I love the fact that we're celebrating healthcare workers, clapping in the streets for nurses and doctors, the essential workers. My son and daughter-in-law are essential workers in LA, stocking grocery store shelves right now. My son told me, somebody came up to him the other day and said, "You're an American hero." He said he felt so awkward. But at least we're celebrating the right stuff. What if we could turn to that and say, our narrative is going to be hope, not superficial optimism that we're all going to go back to work in one more week. We're saying, nope, it may not be a week, but we will get back to work.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm after right now.
I love that, Tim. Thank you so much for sharing that, because I think that's exactly the message that we need right now. That's encouraging to me, so I really hope it's encouraging to everybody else. But we have to be careful. I love that concept, too, of narrative identity. You think, whatever narrative you're telling yourself becomes the thing that you start to believe. And by the way, we saw this, and I know you and I have talked about this a couple of times. We've been comparing a lot this moment in history to another really difficult moment in history called the Great Depression. Thinking about how did those young people who were, you know, teenagers and elementary school students during this really difficult period, how did they get out on the other side of it? And we talk about all the time that mentality of those kids born in that time was be grateful you have a job, right?
There's
this posture or this attitude of gratitude and thankfulness and taking pleasure in what you have. And I think what that represented was a generation who went through a really hard time, but decided that the narrative they were going to walk away with was to be grateful for what you have, rather than being loathsome about whatever happened before. And I think this is just such an important message.
Well, you're right. My mom and dad are wonderful examples. So my dad and I were talking just last weekend. And my father was born in 1930, right at the very beginning of the Great Depression.
Wow.
So the first decade of his life as a child was hard times. And then the next five, between 1940 and 1945, were World War II. So I was talking to Dad about this, and I suggested a couple of thoughts, and I said, "Give me some feedback on that." And he said, "Absolutely, for sure. Our greatest qualities that we developed back then, just because of the times we were in, were gratitude and resourcefulness. We had to be resourceful because there weren't a lot of resources, and we were so grateful for the little resources we had. Neighbors shared with each other, kind of like what we're doing today.
Yes.
Neighbors encouraged each other. Neighbors would give leads to jobs if they didn't need it. Here, go check this out down at the dime store, you know, or whatever. And I love the fact that it produced for them a narrative that my dad still carries with him to this day. And this was actually written up by a Northwestern University psychologist by the name of Dan McAdams. He's an expert in the concept of narrative identity. And he describes narrative identity as an internalized story that you create about yourself. So we all have the ability during this time to say, "I'm a victim. Life is awful. It sucks." High school seniors that you might know, "I didn't get my graduation ceremony. I couldn't go to prom. I didn't get a yearbook signed." That's true. That is absolutely true. And I think we need to mourn with them over that, because that is a rite of passage they're not getting. But what if we said, "But we're going to come up with something creative, and you'll never forget what we did," you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what I love, if we can pivot at this time and do it right. So anyway, that's what I'm pushing for, is instead of being driven by fear and scarcity or selfishness or irrationality, what if we ended up with hope, and what great story could we tell when this thing is over?
Well, we know every great moment is made from the perspective that you keep, the attitude that you keep while you're going through a really hard moment a lot of times.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about this, Tim, because you got three insights, three questions we need to be asking ourselves.
Yeah.
For us as adults, as we're leading these kids, whether we're a parent at home, we're literally right next to them, or we're a teacher and we're mentoring them via the internet, you know, Zoom calls or whatever, or any other interaction that we might be having with the next generation, walk us through, what are the questions we need to be asking right now as we think about the message we're sending to our kids?
Yeah, so this is the overarching umbrella. What message are we sending? Question number one. I would say question number one is really a motive check. A motive check. Check your motive. Is it worry or wisdom that you're communicating to them, to your kids? Is it worry or wisdom? Now, motives can be seen by young people. You all know that. They know when a teacher is frustrated or when a mom is paranoid, okay? They can just tell. Even if you don't say it out loud, your face is screaming it. And sometimes it does come out in our words. We say things like, don't go outside. I don't want you catching that virus and going to the emergency room. Why do we have to paint this ultimately scary picture? I know why, because we're motivating through fear. That's what we're doing. Why couldn't we say, I want you to be, you know, watchful here? Well, I tell you a classic one, and this is one that's been decades old. Many moms and dads will tell their young children, don't go outside and play in the traffic. You'll get hit by a car. So this impression of getting hit by a 2-ton automobile is flashing through their minds. What if we got the same goal accomplished by saying, now, when you're outside, be sure and look both ways because you want to make sure and watch for traffic. Or better yet, it might be wise just to stay back from the traffic. Now, even though it accomplished the same goal, wisdom, not worry, was the motivator. Yeah. And suddenly, we're building wise kids, not worrisome kids, that now become fragile, which, by the way, Greg Lukianoff and Jonathan Haidt wrote that great book, The Coddling of the American Mind, showing data these kids are fragile, and it's our fault. So, again, stockpiling toilet paper, while I know that sounds like it makes sense to you, just know it's sending a message to our kids. Mom's really scared, and, you know, I'm going to stop right there because it goes to toilet paper jokes, and that's just not helpful at this time. So
you're above that.
Yeah, I am. I'm a better man.
I love this as an example because going back to that narrative element, if you think about that example that you gave of traffic, one narrative is the world is a dangerous place and injury is right around the corner.
Yeah.
The other narrative is you can make wise choices.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's right.
And it's such a different message to send to kids. Every action and activity that we take on during this season has the ability to communicate worry or wisdom based on the way we do it and what we're doing. And I think we just have to be really conscientious of that. I love this question. It's really good.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to number two.
Question number two is really a foundation check. I want you to check your foundations. Is it fear or is it facts upon which you base your conclusions? So many people today, not all, but many people today are watching the news all day long because the news is on all day long. We not only have 24/7 news cycles, it's especially needful now because we're thinking there's going to be some new breakthrough that's coming through on some of the news. But just think, Andrew, if you're watching the news for several hours a day, you can get fearful because it's just this coronavirus is bigger than all of us. None of us alive today have ever seen any pandemic quite like this. In fact, the last pandemic that I'm aware of was 100 years ago, 1918 to 1920, with the Spanish flu, that epidemic that turned into a pandemic, and we lost millions of lives back then. But I just think we're better leaders for the next generation, and we send a better message when it's facts. They watch us make our statements based on fact, not fear. So here's what I want you to do about this one. I want you to think deeply about this. Are your conclusions based on a media broadcast, or worse, a social media post created to be clickbait for viewers, not accurate information? Do you buy into maybe a fake news speculation rather than accurate information? The U.S. Surgeon General tweeted recently, and I got this, it's kind of interesting. He's trying to combat the tweets and the social media posts that are out there. He says, and I quote, seriously, people, stop buying masks. They're not effective. Now, that's the Surgeon General. We've also heard many doctors say, get a mask. I don't think wearing a mask or not wearing a mask is the issue. In fact, I would say if you feel your conscience feels much more safe, then wear a mask. But the point is, what's behind it? Are we just scared to death that, you know, if I don't have a mask on, I'm going to catch this thing? When really the data shows, no, you have to be, you know, if you're 6 feet apart, mask or no mask, you're going to be pretty safe. Yeah. But I'm just thinking this is so important that we catch the nuances of our language and we understand what's happening. The Washington Post said recently, and I quote, this virus may be novel, but you really don't need to buy anything new or special to brace for it. Epidemiology experts said the most important aspect of preparedness costs nothing at all. Calm. Mm-hmm. C-A-L-M. Calm. I can get that. That's for free. So yes. So I guess I'll be done. You can volley back. But I just feel like not only do we need to think wisdom or worry, we need to think, am I basing my thinking on facts? And they're not too big and they're not too small. It's really reality. Or is it just fear that's internally motivating all of the words and the tone of my voice, and my children can see, oh my God, Dad's scared, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I love this, Tim. And I think one of the reasons that this can often happen is because we just inundate ourselves with information. And we know, because of the 24-hour news cycle, a lot of times information comes out before it's really clarified or contextualized or some of those things.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times this just happens because we just have the TV on all day.
Yeah.
Or we're constantly checking every single update. And I've even heard you give the advice of if you want to sort of create the proper distance between yourself and this pandemic, read the news for 30 minutes a day and then walk away from it after that.
Yeah.
And I think we need to be doing more things like that so that we're not making decisions based on, did you hear about, or did so-and-so said that maybe if you do this, or whatever we might be, whatever we might be tempted to say, and instead go, you know what, I'm going to wait till I get some context for that statement. I'm going to look it up and see what's true and not true, probably on a CDC site or, you know, somewhere like that, so I can be sure about its truth. But I'm going to wait for that moment to make sure that I'm not jumping on a bandwagon before there's some truth to it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really the bottom line. You said that very well, Andrew.
Well, I love it. All right, the third one.
Third and final one is really to check your advice itself. Check your words. Is it based on panic or principles when you lead them? So I have long been a fan for over probably almost 40 years now of principle-centered leadership. Mm-hmm. When we don't possess a set of principles by which we lead, teach, or parent our kids, we tend to be reactionary. In today's environment, that means we often panic based on the anxiety happening all around us. Any given day, it might be up or down. We catch it, and then our kids catch it from us. Don't panic, said Timothy Brewer, professor of epidemiology and medicine at UCLA. There's no value in panicking or telling people to be afraid. Don't let fear and emotion drive the response to this virus. That can be extremely difficult because it's new, and we're still learning about it, but don't allow fear of what we don't know about the virus to overwhelm what we do know, end quote. So this is really key. If you don't have a set of principles, and many of you might say, you know what, to be honest with you, I really don't. I just try to do what seems to make common sense at any given moment when I lead my children, the team at work, or whatever. I would say, I want to encourage you to step back, grab a tablet, and make a list of what you would consider to be timeless principles that you know to be true, healthy or pandemic time, rich or poor time, right? And when you look at those principles, you know that even in a pandemic, they still work. Andrew, you and I were talking recently. When you lead your team, cover personal things before you cover business things, especially in a pandemic. That's just a good principle. They're people before they're workers. Athletes are people before they're players. This is just important to keep in mind. So these principles have driven me, and I don't think I'm the greatest leader in the world, but Andrew, as we've met virtually as a team, they keep me able to laugh, you know, and still joke and so forth. It's not because I'm trying to live in denial over what's happening. I'm concerned over what's happening for sure, but I've got principles that guide me. They're like a compass. Wherever I am, I've got a true north, and I know exactly where it is.
I love that. We've talked for years, and we've told students for years that having your internal compass made up of your principles and values is one of the most important things you can do. Because what we told them, and this is crazy, there may be a moment somewhere in the future where you feel like you're in the middle of the wilderness, and you're going to be reliant upon that compass pointing you towards north. And I can't think of a bigger wilderness that our world has been in a long time than the one that we're in right now, which is why principles always help. They keep us from going, which direction should I be heading? Well, we know what direction we should be heading because we wrote it down a long time ago. I love this. Base your engagement and your leadership on your principles rather than panic. This is great. Really good stuff.
So the question we need to be asking ourselves, bottom line, is this. What message does my leadership communicate to the kids who follow me? Andrew, one of our teammates, was sharing with us recently about how she was talking to her younger brother in another state, and he was just kind of sad because he just was sad that he wasn't able to be with his friends and see his friends. And very wisely, his dad was standing behind him and said, but yes, but you will be with him again. There's just a simple statement, solid wisdom.
Yes.
You're going to get to see him again. This is right now. It's not very fun. We will have a day that will be better. Keep that in mind. Think long term. That's just a great principle that guides that 11-year-old little boy to make sure he's thinking right in this time. So, I would love to close, Andrew, if you'll let me, just with a quick story.
Please do.
You and I have the undeserved privilege of visiting with lots of school administrators, educators, coaches, and others around the country, and one. We talk about principals. This is another kind of principal. One school principal, Belinda George, is the administrator over Homer Drive Elementary School in Texas. And I love a habit she began even before COVID-19 kicked in that has become especially meaningful during the season. It was her compass that really paid off when everybody was scared. So some time ago, she was noticing that the children in her elementary school had lower reading scores, much lower than they ought to be. They were not keeping up with the appropriate grade level that they should have been. And she said also she was noticing that one of the reasons why that was happening is either their parents were single parents and they didn't have time to read with their children or read a bedtime story or whatever, or both parents were there, but they were both working just to make ends meet. So these kids, alas, were in homes that maybe had no one reading with them or listening to them as they read, and their reading scores were lower. Well, Belinda George, this hero of mine, decided that she could take a step that would be able to complement what the need was and also maybe do even more good. So she started something called Tucked In Tuesdays. Tucked In Tuesdays. And again, long before this quarantine thing happened, she would get on Facebook Live on Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock.
Mm.
And she would get in her pajamas. So this sweet principal is in her pajamas. I think she had a footies on, you know, whatever. But she would hold up the book and say, this is what we're reading tonight. And she'd give shout outs to kids that she knew had read this book, or a little kid over here that she knew was listening that had figured out this word last week. You know, just encouraging, reading the book, making it fun for them, and saying, kids, if you've not read this book, you ought to read this book. This is a great book, you know. And, oh my gosh. So here's what I love about this. Not only did she say reading scores were up when she started doing it, they just started climbing when she started doing this, but she said, I only have several hundred kids going to my school. There are thousands of kids tuning into Facebook Live.
Wow.
To be tucked in. I'm getting choked up just telling the story because I'm thinking, little did she know she would meet so many needs, especially now when kids are going, I just need a grown-up to tuck me in. Mm-hmm. And I need someone that's not scared. I need someone that's not scared right now. So this is the kind of leadership we need to offer. And I just want to encourage your listeners, ask those three questions of yourself and make sure that we're leading and sending the right message to those who follow.
Mm. Thank you, Tim. That's so good. Well, I would love for you guys listening to be principle-centered leaders in your home. And one resource we have developed, I think, can really help you with that. It's actually a free resource called Home Chats. And they're conversations around principles that matter, principles that are really mattering right now in the midst of quarantine and isolation and all the things that are going on. If you go to growingleaders.com/homechats, you'll find them there. There are 8 conversation starters. They've got activities along with them and all kinds of interesting discussion questions, stories about things that are happening in the midst of the pandemic. They're very, 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 very fun and cool way to have a conversation about things that really, really matter. And I invite you to check those out. Again, that's growingleaders.com/homechats. Well, as always, if you would rate this podcast, that really gets the word out about what we're doing here. We prefer 5 stars, if you will, but whatever you feel is appropriate is good for us. Follow us on social media. We are at Tim Elmore and at Growing Leaders, pretty much everywhere you guys are. And then lastly, if you've got ideas for this podcast, people you want us to interview, conversations you want us to have, shoot us an email. It's podcast@growingleaders.com. We love getting those from you. Tim, thank you so much for leading us with hope and wisdom. Appreciate all of your insights. Please, I want to encourage you guys, ask yourselves those questions this week, and we'll see you next time.